Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We've been speaking with Dr. Jared Cooney Horvath. He is the author of Stop Talking, Start Influencing, and he's a renowned cognitive neuroscientist with an expertise in human learning and memory. So welcome back, Jared. We were just going to talk about some of the things that you've learned and are teaching about recall strategies and helping the mind to work better.
Yeah. So we were thinking, people always go, okay, so what kind of strategies can I use for recall? And I think these are where, especially in meetings, in classes, and in locker rooms, if you're a coach for a sports team, this is where you have, as a leader, you have your team, your class, your students, debate an issue, teach it to one another, draw their ideas out. All of these nuggets, rather than just standing up and being the, I'm in charge, I hold the information, let me give it to you. These are the things that really let people internalize and make deep memories for the things they want to use. And in fact, it's funny, someone, I think it was just 2 weeks ago, just published a new article that shows rather than taking notes while you're listening to the person speak, if you just listen, kind of engage with them, and then draw out your recollection after the event is done. So in the 5 minutes when the talk is over, drawing out your thoughts helps you remember more than if you were to just take notes while the person was talking. So it's all these kind of really unique recall strategies that force you to do the work, and that's what helps memories get deep.
So remember to talk about events and things right after with the people that, because they'll all have a different aspect about what they heard or saw, too.
Oh, yeah, and then you start to expand your concepts of what you've learned, and I fear a lot of people don't get around to that. They're so busy trying to take notes and take information in. And I think they have the best intentions to go back and apply it. But then a week later, the conference is over, they're back at work, and they totally forgot everything that was interesting to them. So it's the faster you can do it, the more you can do it, that's where things really start to become good.
So really, we can't do it alone. We have to interact.
You can do it alone. Like if you self-quiz yourself, I can imagine if you make, say, note cards, you could develop ways to force yourself to recall. I think you're absolutely right. It's easier with a group. And like you said, the second benefit of doing it with others is an expansion of your viewpoint. It's really easy for us to just narrow in our own concepts. And I think, unfortunately, things like Facebook news feeds really help us do this, where we kind of just go into an echo chamber of just one idea of one concept. So the more we can talk with other people and spread it out, the more we always keep that concept flexible. We bring in new ideas. We change the way we think about things. So you can do it alone, but like you said, collaboration is always going to be a good idea.
Okay. And it was kind of the old thought process that we had to hear something at least 7 times before it actually stuck. Is that kind of gone by the wayside now?
Yeah, that was back in the old concept of let me just keep putting it in. As long as I keep putting information in, eventually you'll have a memory of it. Still doesn't work. You could hear something a million times and not remember it. I'm sure there are radio commercials that people have heard a ton and they couldn't pull it out. Mm-hmm. Hear something once though, like I think about something like Game of Thrones. That's a television show I've really only watched once. But I remember so much about it because after seeing it once, I just kept talking about it. So there are things that, like a radio jingle, once you hear it once, if you start singing it, then congratulations, that thing is going to be stuck in your head, whether you want it to be or not.
Right. So how is our attention kind of similar to an Atari video game? You bring that up in your book.
So how is what?
How is our attention span or our attention, our ability to stay attentive, similar to an Atari video game?
I use the video game analogy to talk about essentially multitasking. So we have kind of this desire in the world right now to try and pay attention to multiple things at once. So I'm going to send an email while talking on the phone, while, I don't know, looking at Facebook, all this stuff. And unfortunately, we now know, neurologically speaking, it's impossible. No human being has ever been able to multitask. And it's a hardware issue. So I always liken it to whatever task you're trying to do, that has its own rule set. So there are certain things that make that task doable. Like talking to you, I need to speak. I need to think about certain words. I don't want to move my hand, all this other stuff. Unfortunately, we only have one rule set slot in our brain at any one time. We can only hold on to one rule set. So this is where I liken it to those old video games like Nintendo, where you can have a million cartridges, different games you could play, but you can only put one game in at a time. So when you're multitasking, you're not actually ever doing two things at once. You're just really quickly jumping back and forth. And the problem is when you do that, you keep losing information from both streams of data. So when you multitask, you learn less, you remember less, you perform slower, you perform worse. And the big joke is we think we're doing better, we're being more efficient, but it's just a physical impossibility in the brain. It can't be done. And we now have all the data and evidence we need to show you that if you're trying to do two things at once, you'd be a lot better to just stop, pick one, finish it, and then move to the other.
Okay, Jared, the big question, are men's and women's brains different then? Or everybody should just one task at once?
You get all these really good arguments. I think we notice there are some behavioral differences between people, but once you get to the level of the brain, we can't find anything different. We play this game all the time in the lab where we'll show somebody a brain scan and everyone has to guess, is it a male or a female? And no one can do it accurately. So at the level of the brain, it looks like there's just no big difference. The issue is individually. So every person has a different brain, and that's what makes it so difficult. It doesn't seem to divide along gender lines so much as it divides along life lines. So whatever you've chosen to study, do, learn as you've gotten to this age in your life, that makes your brain totally unique and different from my brain because of all the choices I've done up to this point in my life. So once you get to age 4, 5, 6, every brain is like a fingerprint. It just looks so different that we can't say, it's a guy brain or a girl brain. It's just, what were you doing with your life? And that drives what the brain then looks like.
Okay. And so with these brain scans, stress causes a lot of dysfunction to the brain's natural flow, right?
Yes, ma'am. So stress, and I think with the holidays coming up, the stress stuff is really important. Just in a real quick nutshell, when you have a stress response, certain chemicals flood into the part of your brain that allows you to essentially be rational, control your thought, kind of inhibition, and doesn't shut that part down, but really quiets that part of the brain down. So you lose a sense of rationality, and then it pumps chemicals into the memory networks of the brain, which makes you highly reactive. And the idea is simple, that if you have a short stressor, you probably want to pay attention to it and remember it. So like if a bear came in, you don't want to be thinking about math problems. You want to be focused on the bear and deeply remember that moment for any future occurrence. So that's what the stress response in the short term does. Shuts off the rational part, forms deep memories in the reactive part. The problem is once stress becomes prolonged and you stay in that state, the rational part stays off for so long, and those chemicals in the memory bits actually start to kill the memory network and start to physically kill the neurons that control them. So once you're in stress for a long period of time, you stay irrational, and then you have a difficulty forming new memories. All of a sudden, you can't access old thoughts. You can't make new memories, and you just kind of enter this dead zone. So you can see why with students, it was a big thing where we were saying, all right, if we have trauma-informed students or highly stressed-out students due to home issues, they're not going to learn anything until we can get them out of that stress response. And that's where the research, for me anyway, started. But now it's pushed to the holidays where we have a lot of people with just days and weeks of stress at a time over the holidays. And how can we help them get out of it so they can actually start to engage with and form real memories of these moments rather than just kind of run right through them?
Right. So how can we do that, Jared?
Well, I think what's interesting is stress response starts in the body. So before you even know you're having it, the body is kicking in. And then you mentally select stress as the feeling you want. And then the whole cascade starts. So with this, that actually gives us kind of two windows, is we could either target the body or the mind. So the easiest way to do it is always to just target the body. Once the body starts its thing and you know it's a stress response, the heart's going, the breathing gets shallow, that's when you want to say, okay, I just need to do some things to change the chemicals in my body. And here's where things like exercise or deep breathing really start to work out. So if you deep breathe and take a big deep breath in from the diaphragm and hold it, that starts to activate chemicals through your lungs, which shoot out into your body and start to change heart rate, start to change muscle tension. So you're using your lungs as a way to shift the rest of the body. And it works incredibly well if you when you do it right. So you've got kind of step one is target the body. Mm-hmm. Or step two is target your mind. If you know a stressful event is coming up, you can what we call reframe it. It's where you start to think about your own thinking patterns about certain events and stressors. So if there's one person I'm really scared of that I don't want to see, before I even see them, I start to think about what reaction I might have. And I start to change the way I think in those moments to go, okay, if this person says X, what if I think like this? What if I do this? So the mental stuff, you try and catch your own thinking out and change it, reframe it. And the mental, unfortunately, is a lot harder than the physical. The physical stuff is easier to do quicker. But the mental stuff, if you can get that right, that tends to last longer. Get it right today, and you can still do it tomorrow, the day after that. So we kind of play the two off of each other. Use the body for the quick fix, and then keep working on that mental reframing for future occurrences of the same stressor.
So, Jared, is that where yoga would come in, like deep breathing and mantras to change the frame of mind?
Absolutely. And then what I think something like yoga and meditation, what they do so well is, yep, they target the body, and then once the body is in a very good state, they then start targeting the mind, where it's, like you said, the mantras, the kind of the open thought where you just let ideas come and go. When the body's in a nice, comfortable spot, then you have a much easier chance of noticing and starting to control and manipulate your own framing, your own mentality. So that's, to be fair, there are some yogas that are really hardcore. Like when you go into a room that's a million degrees,
yes,
and it's more like running a marathon. So those ones, you know, do your thing. But the other kind of softer yogas, those are very good for both the body and the mind. And I don't think you could do anything wrong with those ones.
So
those
pranayama, the breath work and the meditation are where the neuroscience comes in.
Exactly. And what's cool is so I guess for thousands of years, they've known that this stuff works. Now we're just finding the mechanisms where we can say, here's why it's working. It's because your lungs are doing this. It's because these chemicals are flooding into the frontal lobe. Now that we know the why, we can come back and say, yep, this is a very viable technique. Let's keep it up.
Well, thank you for proving it, because we know it works. It's so good to have you on the radio today, Jared. Would you like to just quickly tell us about the book that you have coming out March 2019 and how you can reserve a copy?
Yeah, so the book is Stop Talking, Start Influencing, and it's 12 chapters, which are 12 key thinking and learning principles. So if you want to know how you learn or how your kids learn or how your employees learn, here's 12 just really big nuggets on the thinking front to say, here's how people think and learn so that you can start to influence them and make sure information goes in a unique way so that they can learn from you. So it comes out, in March, and it'll be on Amazon and online and everywhere. So I'm really proud of the book, so I hope somebody gets to learn a thing or two from it.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Jared. Wonderful to have you on the show. We're just going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, the second half.